We're doing our class on the Jewish home. We had started discussing last week how sometimes, just as a person's leaving the house, his wife is going to have another question. And just when he's in a rush, he's going to have a request. And sometimes women will ask a question, and we take it literally, and they don't mean it literally. So you could have your most important meeting with your boss, and your wife says, "Can you eat breakfast with me today?" And you're looking at your watch, and you're looking at your wife, and you're looking at your watch, and you're thinking of your responsibilities, and you're thinking, if I sit down and eat breakfast with her, I'm going to miss that meeting, I'm going to lose my job. So sometimes we as men will naturally react. We're going to say, "Come on, what's wrong with you? You know I have a meeting today. Why are you doing this to me? Why do you even ask me? You don't want me to go to the meeting. You want me to lose the job. Well, how are we going to manage?" Right? That's a natural male reaction. She asked the question. We heard a question, right? She said, "Can we have breakfast together today?" And what did you hear? You heard, "Can we have breakfast together today?" What did she say? What she said wasn't that. What she said was, "Would you like to have breakfast with me?" The answer to that is yes. The but is a different question. Okay. So instead of answering the way we men hear, we have to answer the way they women talk. So then the answer has to be, "You know, I'd love to. That's a great idea. I'll tell you, I'm not sure how we can make it work today because I have that meeting. But first, express that you want to." She asked you, "Do you want to?" Ah, but she didn't say that. She used female language, which is, "Can you stay?" The answer to that is no. Right, so us men, we hear what they said, but that's not what she said. In her language, she asked, "Would you like to?" In our language, if you meant "would you like to," what you should have said is, "I know you can't, I don't want you to, but I want to know hypothetically, if you could, would you want to?" That's the way a man would talk, but she's a woman. So what she says is, "Can you stay home this morning and eat with me?" And you heard, "Can you stay home and eat with me?" To which the answer is no. No, 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 no. Go back. Pause. Step one, don't react. Step two is think it through. And then share emotion. "Yes, I'd like to. That's a great idea. I don't think I could, but I definitely want to." And it's not natural. To us men, that's really counterintuitive. And if you think about it, this happens in many, many realms. A woman can't have kids, they're married a number of years, and she comes and says, "Give me kids or I'm going to die." So what does her husband say? "Can I give you kids? God's in control." You guys know the story, right? Rachel comes, Rachel Imenu, comes to Yaakov Avinu and says, "Give me kids. I'm going to die if you don't give me kids." And what does Yaakov Avinu tell her? He says, "Am I God?" Our sages say, that's not what she was asking you. You were supposed to tell her, of course, it's terrible. It's so difficult that you don't have kids. I wish you could have kids. Our sages say that throughout our history, men haven't always understood what women were saying. There was a man whose wife says, "We can't have kids. Maybe you should take on another wife." So the Medrash Rabbah says that when Sarah Imenu came to Avram and said, "Maybe you should take Hagar," the Medrash says Avram was supposed to say, "No way. Sarah, take on another wife." Avram says, "Okay, if you say so." Okay, what am I supposed to say? So Avram takes on Hagar. But the Medrash Rabbah says Avram didn't understand Sarah. Avram was supposed to say, "Sarah, no, 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 let's work at it together. Let's figure out a different solution." It's mind-boggling. The Medrash says that about Avram. I couldn't say that. The Medrash says. So your wife comes and tells you something, and you as a man hear, that's what she asks. "So what do you want?" I said, "Okay, fine." She asked. I didn't ask. No. No. Just because she asked X doesn't mean she asked for X. She hypothesized. In female language, she asked, "Do you want it?" Even though she asked, "Could you do it?" Her question was, "Do you want it?"
So you're saying that Yaakov Avinu and Avraham Avinu should have come to your classes.
I'm not smarter than they are, but I'm quoting a Medrash Rabbah. What do I know? The Medrash Rabbah with the interpretation of the Yafei Toar. That's what the Medrash Rabbah says.
In seriousness, that they made also these kind of mistakes in English.
Throughout Tanakh, on their level. But if Chazal tell it us, then Chazal came to give us insight. Chazal are telling us what we have to learn from the story. We wouldn't be able to criticize them. But if Chazal tells us, they knew how to understand the Torah. The concept is important. Whether you see it in Avram and Yaakov is not so relevant to me. The importance is that you see it in your own life. So, point number one that we discussed today, sometimes a request is made. What we hear is, can you do it? And what we should hear is, do you want to? The answer to can you, which is the way they express it, will naturally be no way. The answer to do you want to will be, of course I want to. And what we have to train ourselves is, when they say can you, what we have to hear is, do you want to? Point number two. When we have conversation, there are really many other things at play in every conversation. It's one of the challenges in family businesses. A person presents an idea, and someone else argues. A superficial glance tells you the person who presented the idea thought it was a good idea for the company. The person who argued thought it was a bad idea for the company. If you understand the psychology behind it, what you start understanding is, the person who presented it might not have given it so much thought, but thought it was very important that the rest of the company feels like they're an innovator. The person who said it's a bad idea might not have really thought it was a bad idea. Could be they just had a need to knock what the other guy said. There are people who always feel like they have to make a comment. It can't be that what that person said is right. There must be something wrong with it. And there are people who will always argue with you. And to some degree, we all have that within us. You know, I saw a funny line the other day. Every family has someone weird in the family. If you don't have someone weird in the family, then that means you're the guy. So we all have tendencies. And if we don't notice them, then we're probably blind to our own tendencies. How many times do we make a comment just because we want to sound smart? How many times have we made the comment because it's appropriate, it's right? And how many times do we say it because it's important for us to be heard? Well, if we can understand where people are making their claims from, then we can help them, and they will feel like winners and we will feel like winners. One of the keys in every resolution is understanding what's really driving the other person. If we can understand that, we can help them. If we don't understand that, then we're going to deal with the superficial level of what's going on. Now, the key to understanding it is listening. The key to understanding what the other person really wants is listening. The more you listen, the more you'll understand. I'll give you a few stories. There were two neighbors. The two neighbors had come to an agreement that they would build a wall in between them. So neighbor number one builds the wall between them and neighbor number two. They ask them for permission. Neighbor number two says, fine. Neighbor number one builds a wall, only the wall is very high. Neighbor number two comes back and says to neighbor number one, okay, let's give them names. We'll call neighbor number one Avram. We'll call neighbor number two Susan. So Susan comes to Avram and says, you know, you built that wall really high. Avram says, you saw me as I was building it. If you would have told me, I would have kept it lower. Why didn't you say anything? You saw me building it layer after layer. You could have said something if it bothered you. Susan says, Okay. They come to terms. Then Avram goes on his roof, on his porch, and he builds a roof on top of his porch. But before he does that, he goes over to Susan's husband, and he says, Mr. Susan, do you give me permission to, is it okay with you if I build, I know different things bother you guys, I just want to make sure, is it okay if I build a roof over my porch? Because when it rains, the water's coming into my upper floor. So Mr. Susan says, no problem. As much as you want. After you built that wall, I don't care what you do on that porch. So he starts building a roof. He's only built a third of the roof. When Susan comes out and says, "What are you doing?" Avram says, "What's the problem? What does it affect you?" She says, "You're blocking all my sunlight." He says, "It's my porch. Where's it blocking your sunlight?" She says, "Please stop, please. You're blocking all my sunlight." He says, "Okay, I'll stop. But you know, I asked you guys before I bought the materials, before I built this roof, and your husband said it was okay." She says, "It's not okay. You should have asked me. You're blocking all my sunlight. Please stop." He says, "Okay, I'll stop. But is it okay if I come and see what you're talking about?" She says, "Yeah, come see what we're talking about." He says, "Right now I gotta go, but I'll come back." So he comes back, and he does something very smart. He goes to Susan's house. He says, "Come, I want you and your husband to show me what you're talking about." And when he starts looking from their house, he starts seeing what the wall looks like from their house. And then he looks out of their window, and all he sees is the wall. And his eyes go up and up and up. And then when he reaches the top of the wall, he finally thinks he could see the sky, and there's the roof. From his angle, he didn't realize what he was doing to them. From their angle, the roof was, at least they finished looking at the wall, they could see the sky. Now, just where he built the roof, that's where he's blocking their whatever remained of some sky. Now, when you're looking up from a porch down at a wall, you don't understand what they're seeing. But if you see what they see, then you can start understanding what they want. Just two different vantage points. One's looking up, the other one's looking down. He asked me, "What do I do?" I said, "Step number one, go there so that they feel like you're listening to them, you're understanding them. Go to their house with the husband and wife there and tell them, I want to see what you guys are seeing." I said, "Step number two, listen to them. But you don't look at your stopwatch. You listen to them for as long as they talk. Let them at least feel like you've heard them." So he did that. He went over to their house and he listened. And he listened. And he listened some more. And after about 45 minutes, and I told him the only way this is going to work is if they feel like they've told you everything they have to say. And if you listen closely, you'll hear within their argument what they really want to say. And it's not the words. There's something else you have to hear. He listened, and after 45 minutes, he understood that what they wanted to hear was, "You will take into account what we want. You didn't just build without..." So the first thing he tried saying is, "You know, I did ask you before I bought the materials." And the second thing he said was, "I'll make you a deal. I built a third. I won't build the other two-thirds. You leave me with the third, and I won't build the two-thirds because I see it's bothering you. I see it's taking away from your sunlight. And this way you'll get what you want, and I'll get part of what I want." Now, you could say, why shouldn't he build the other two-thirds? You could also say, but it made him happy. And I'll tell you something off the record. And now comes the big secret, which if you can remember, will resolve most issues you run into. We'll start with what you don't want to hear, okay? Forgive me, but every guy, when he's talking to his wife, is really saying one thing. "I'm really sorry if I'm hurting you by telling you this, but this is what every guy is really saying in all conversations with his wife." He's saying one sentence, and if you could listen to that sentence, then as a woman, you'll know how to make him happy. Every guy keeps on saying the same sentence. He keeps on telling his wife, "Do you know how great I am?" That's the only sentence men say in marriage. Everything you're saying, "I bought the butter. Do you know how great I am? I bought the butter. I took the kids to school. Do you know how great I am? I took the kids to school. I filled the car with gas. Do you appreciate how great I am? I just got a raise. Do you know how great I am?" There is one sentence that keeps repeating itself over and over and over again. If a woman were smart, then she will repeatedly tell her husband, "You are amazing. You are great." What are women saying in every conversation? In every conversation, women are repeating a question. They're not saying a statement. They keep repeating the same question, and it's everything they say. If you can only hear that question, you'll understand every sentence.
It's Proverbs
That's it. Do you love me? That's it. That's the only sentence that's going on in marriage. Now, men get so frustrated because here's what happens. He went to the store. He looked for the butter she asked for. He didn't remember the right butter. He knew it was Blue Band. He got the Blue Band with salt. She wanted the Blue Band without salt. He comes home with the butter. What does he say? He says, "You see, I got the butter. You see how great I am?" What does she answer? "But that's not the butter the kids like." What is she saying? She's hurt. He looks at her and says, "I stood in line for 20 minutes for that butter. You know, there was a long line, and I had to figure out how to make it not melt in my hand. You see how great I am?" What is she saying? "I can't believe you did that to me." She's on the verge of tears. He looks at her and says, "Why is it so personal?" And she says, "If you really cared, you'd get me the right butter." Now he's looking at her, "You can come on, butter. What happened?" One question. If he would have understood the conversation, he would have played it according to her language. "You know how much I love you? You know how important it was for me to get you the right butter? Oh no, I got the wrong butter. You think it's funny? I'll tell you, I've done this numerous times and everyone told me it succeeded. I told couples who were having a challenging time, I said, I want you to play the following game. Choose 1 hour when you're together, and the deal is, and you both know you're faking it, but the deal is, you don't say a single sentence to your spouse for that hour without beginning with a sentence the guy has to tell the girl, 'I love you.' Now you could use different wording. You could say, 'I love you, I'm crazy about you, I'm so lucky, I married you, I spend my whole day thinking about you, I can't wait till we get together again.' Choose 1 hour, and every sentence has to begin with a sentence that means 'I love you.' She knows it's a game, she knows you're doing it because we agreed. And she, every sentence she tells you, she has to begin with the sentence, 'You're amazing.' Now it's going to sound funny, right? But you know how good a guy feels when his wife tells him 15 times in 10 minutes, 'You're amazing.' Now it's a game, right? He knows it's a game, she knows it's a game. But every guy who hears it feels great. Bottom line, words affect us, even when we know it's a game. And again, every couple that's tried this came back glowing. Right? And everyone's embarrassed. I can't do this anymore. Sure you can. Sure you can. It's not a game. It's real. We're out of practice. We're not good at this. You should know that husbands who know how to do this have the happiest wives. And then they come tenfold. They're happy to do whatever you want. They really... us husbands, we grunt. Psst. Right? We make signals. We're not good at talking unless we're angry. Oh, then we know how to talk. Oh, boy. When we're frustrated, when we're upset, suddenly our tongue is untied. But what about expressing affection, emotion, feeling? Feeling. Guys, it's a real word in the dictionary. That's where we suddenly get tongue-tied. And so this game helps us say the things we really should be saying. You don't have to say it in front of other people. That's not modest. But she does have to hear it. And if you can say every sentence you begin with that, husbands sometimes say, "How do I fix this marriage? How do I make things better?" Try 1 hour. Try 1 hour where every sentence you begin with an expression of, "I'm crazy about you." Yes, I'll pass the butter.
Question. Just a short one.
Yes.
Have you never kind of come to the conclusion that sometimes the opposite might also be good to be doing, like, imagine that man who never says, "You know how great I am," but just says, "You know how crazy I am." If it's the only discussion, if it's the only statement he's making all the time, it's not going to get dull or boring.
You're amazing. That's such a good question. But it doesn't get boring. Didn't it feel good to hear that?
Maybe, but it could also be that if you see a woman and she wouldn't be asking this question, if she would be doing the opposite, it would be very strange. But it doesn't sound like you're saying that's the case also.
I'm not saying women don't need appreciation. We'll still talk about the fact that women also need to be appreciated, and that's a major component.
No, what I mean is very simply, I'm not so clear, I think. If a woman would say all the time, "You know how great you are," and if the man was always to say exactly what she wanted to hear, wouldn't it get a little bit dull?
I think you have to be innovative. You shouldn't repeat the same words. But I don't think you'd get tired of hearing "you're amazing." I don't think so.
That's probably not the worst thing to hear.
Right?
As long as it's not the same thing you say.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And there are many ways to say it. If it's important to say, then there are many ways to say it. I'm serious.
I'm also.
You know, when you take the time to smile when you ask a question, it lightens up the room. You see? A small comment. We'll end with a simple story. There was a girl whose parents moved from a small town to a city. And the girl had grown up with her friends. She was in high school. These were kids she knew from the day she was born. And so she asked her parents if she could stay in the high school she was in, even though they were moving, because these were her friends. She grew up with them. This was all of life there. And her parents said, "We're sorry, we need you to come because your sister has, I think it was cerebral palsy, and we need your help. We can't manage without you." So she came. What choice did she have? She moved with the family to the big city. And then one time she took her sister to the medical clinic. And as they're waiting in line, her sister walks over to a lady and sees a yellow pin the lady has on her shirt. And she says, "You know, that's such a nice pin you're wearing. It's really, really nice. It really matches nicely with your outfit." And she says like two or three sentences. And she leaves the person glowing. So when the sister with CP, after she finished saying that, she comes back. So the older sister asks her, "Why do you do that?" So she said, "It made the other person happy. It's not so hard." She said, "Isn't it hard? Isn't it hard? You didn't know that person. You walked over and you complimented her and she smiled. It seemed to make her happy. But you don't know her. You never spoke to her before." And then the younger sister with CP said, "It's hard, but it's not as hard as walking. Walking is much harder." So the older sister, when she writes the story, she says, "You know, I stuck around to take care of my younger sister. But what was I supposed to say now? Walking isn't hard for me. Walking is hard for her." And she says that walking is harder than going over to someone and saying, "You know, that's really nice. You look great with that." But we take walking for granted and we don't invest the effort to go and make someone else happy. Marriage is about investing that effort. It doesn't come naturally. It's not easy to say these positive words to someone else. It's not easy to hear your wife ask you a question of, "I'd like to," and you have to reinterpret and tell yourself what she meant to ask is, "Do you also want to? Not should we do it right now?" We have to train ourselves, but it's easier than learning to walk. It's just that we have to decide we want to invest the effort and to repeatedly show our wives and express verbally. It's not just the action, because again, men talk a language that women don't hear. If women would really know that when you stood in line for 20 minutes to buy her the wrong butter, there was a lot of love in that action, then marriage would be much better. If women would be able to see that men are expressing love in all the things that they try to do. "You know, I parked the car, I turned it around, so when you get up in the morning, you'll have an easier way getting out of the driveway. What you mean to say is I did a small action, but it was another way I meant to express that I love you." But women have to hear it in words, and men have a hard time saying it. But they don't see it in the actions. And this is relevant to every area where men are find it easier to express their emotion in action, but women have to hear it in words. But men also have to hear it in words. By the way, to our female listeners, men also have to hear that line, "You are great, you are awesome, you are wonderful, I'm so lucky to be married to you." It's not natural, it's the learning process, and as we learn it, we develop into gentler, kinder, better people.